We're joined on the phone now by Jane and Frank Allen. They live in the West Country in England. Frank is retired from the Royal Marines and ran a diving center. Jane is an IT project manager and a longtime serving member of the Royal Naval Reserves. Welcome, Jane and Frank.
Hello, Anne. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, we wanted to speak with you because you were fortunate enough to sail on the recent Titanic Memorial Cruise because of your great uncle Tom. Tell us about that. Why was he on that ship?
My great uncle Tom was out there traveling on the Titanic with his wife Edith. They had delayed, as we understand it from family history, their honeymoon. They'd been married about 18 months before. And they were traveling on the Titanic, first class, and he was also going out there to do some business to do with the family company Pears Soap.
What did you learn about him in the course of preparing for your cruise?
I learned quite a lot about him because through my grandfather, his brother, he spoke very warmly about my great-uncle Tom on more than one occasion and said how sad it was that Tom had not survived the Titanic disaster because he was very influential in building up the business back in the UK. Now, Pears Soap was world-renowned by the turn of the 1900s, and Tom's loss did affect, I think, the future outcome of the family. But more importantly, it also affected my grandfather, because my grandfather was training to be an engineer, and then with the sudden loss of Tom going down in the Titanic, my grandfather, who was at Cambridge, finished Cambridge University and then found himself in the Pears Soap business. Hmm. Unlike Tom, Tom had done 9 years there as an apprenticeship through every aspect of the business, so he knew the business very, very well. But for my grandfather, it was pretty new for him.
Mm-hmm. So how old was your great uncle when he died?
He was just coming up to his 29th birthday.
Oh, but his wife, Edith, survived.
She did. Probably by virtue of travelling first class, and she was off in one of the first lifeboats, lifeboat number 8. So she survived, but although she survived, it must have still been very traumatic, as it was for all survivors.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that there were how many passengers on this memorial cruise?
The number of passengers, and I'm going to check with Frank, was, I believe, the same as on the Titanic.
So it was about 1,300 something?
Yeah, that's
correct.
And how many of you had family connections to people who had died or had survived the sinking?
We think there were about 40 people altogether with direct connections, family connections, to those who were on the Titanic for that cruise.
Okay. So you were one of the few people that had a specific family reason for going on that cruise.
Well, Jane was. I was just there in support, really. Hers was the direct link. I had none.
Right. And what, Jane, what did you hope to do or learn by doing this?
The sole purpose for me going was to be there at the memorial service 100 years on, 2.5 miles up, you know, out in the North Atlantic, 2.5 miles up from the wreck of the ship. I particularly wanted to retrace the route, but the most important thing was the service. And then, as I've also previously mentioned, Aunt Edith did survive. And for all those survivors that arrived in New York for 4 days, 5 days after the disaster, it was important to see that aspect of it as well, because everybody seemed to think that they were lucky. But in my view, many people had lost everything. As we know, there were lots of steerage passengers or third-class passengers on board the Titanic. Some of those survived as well. Of course, when they got into New York, unlike Edith, who was traveling first class, those steerage passengers had nothing. They'd lost everything and much more besides, and the hope of a new future as well for some of them.
I guess that's a point that you don't hear mentioned very often. I'm glad you said that. So tell us a little bit about the ship and about the cruise.
Well, the ship was very comfortable. We very much enjoyed the trip, and we enjoyed meeting the people who were on the same pilgrimage, if you like, as we were, although many others had different reasons for being there. There were reenactment societies or members of such societies, and their main reason was to sort of dress up and recreate the cruise and perhaps have a party. Our reason for being there, of course, was totally different. It was to commemorate and remember those who died. And I think for everybody who was on the ship, no matter what reason they were there, when we got to the site and not moored, but switched off the engines, and we were 2.5 miles above that wreck on the night, 100 years exactly to the day, and took part in the service, it was a very poignant and emotional time for everybody, whether they had contacts on the original voyage or not.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'd like you each to tell us a little bit about what that service was like. Jane, would you go first?
Yes, because of the size of the ship, what happened beforehand, they had two church services held inside the ship, in two parts of the ship, and that's where we took part in that. There were readings, there were candles lit, and then later on, we went outside just after 2 o'clock in the morning, because Titanic, as most people would know, sank finally at 2:20 on that awful night 100 years ago. So we went out on deck at 2 o'clock, and there was a shorter service then held out on deck, and before some wreaths were cast into the sea in memory of all those people who lost their lives. And we've got to remember, you know, it wasn't just passengers. There were a lot of loss of life amongst the crew as well. So it was for everybody. It was very atmospheric. It was, obviously, we had lights on board the ship, and there was another ship that had come out from New York, the Azamara, and that was sort of holding off from us. So there was some comfort, if you like. There were other lights at sea that night from that one other ship. But it still put it into context, because as we stood there at just before 12:20, you knew we were all going to be very safe and secure and weren't going to go down. But it brought it home to you that on that night 100 years ago, those people that hadn't got away in lifeboats were then faced with a dilemma. Do they stay with the ship? And the natural instinct is to stay with something firm that you can hold on to. Or did they jump or wait for the water to lap up to their feet? Because as we all know, the ship tilted and, you know, split and then tilted. And as we looked down at the frothing sea below us, and it was pitch black apart from these lights of the other ship in the distance and the starlight, you can have some feeling and fear for what the utter terror everybody must have felt that night, the people that were left on the ship, but also those that were bobbing around in lifeboats or clasping to bits of wreckage, hoping that they were going to be rescued. But of course, really, there wasn't much hope, or because they knew that help wasn't at hand or close at hand, and you survived very few minutes in such cold waters.
Of course. Frank, what were your thoughts during that service?
My thoughts were really focusing on Tom. Having got his wife away in that lifeboat earlier on, he would have had perhaps concerns for her safety rather than his at first, because I think most people didn't believe that the ship would sink and that the launching of lifeboats were a precaution. But then he would have had subsequently time to see the worsening situation on the ship and then really be concerned for his own safety and see people jumping into the sea and people panicking. And at some stage he must have decided, well, I either jump or stay with the ship, as Jane was just saying. And I would guess that being a resourceful man, he would have stayed with the ship, because the longer you're on the ship, the more chance there is of something coming to your rescue, because they were told ships were on their way to take them off.
Mm-hmm.
At some stage he would have had to jump into that sea. And I think when you think of one person's story rather than the whole disaster, it helps you focus on what it must have been like.
Yes.
And certainly looking into that black sea that night with the stars overhead and listening to the hymn that the orchestra played at the end, Nearer My God to Thee, which was the same music that the orchestra on board the Titanic were playing right until the end. It just brought everything home in a way that nothing else could, being on the spot at night under the stars 100 years ago to the moment, brought it very vividly to mind, and it must have been an awful, awful thing for everybody involved.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a very incredible and moving experience that you had there.
It certainly was.
I think, Anne, I was just going to add there that when the tenor, the singer that was there, the bass, that sang Nearer My God to Thee, started, most people were just so subdued, and it really brought it home. And that was the moment when everything went very quiet again.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Jane and Frank Allen. They're from the West Country in England, and they recently were on the Titanic Memorial Cruise that retraced the route of the Titanic about 100 years ago last week. We're going to switch gears a little bit here and ask you to talk about how you spent your leisure time on that ship. You have a pretty exciting event coming up for both of you.
Yes, we do, Anne. We were out there and we thought we needed to do some training. By pure coincidence, both Frank and myself have been selected to be Olympic torchbearers. Of course, 2012 is the year of the Olympics and being held in the UK here. We decided we'd make some use of time on board ship. Even when it was a force 8 gale, we managed to get out there. And Frank will tell you how he chased me around the deck.
Hey, that sounds kind of fun.
I think chasing is the right word. We set ourselves a target each day of trying to walk 5 miles, not just walk, but walk very briskly as fast as we could in the prevailing sea conditions with the moving ship, to walk 5 miles a day around the promenade deck, avoiding as best we could all the other promenaders in our way. And also the not-so-energetic people on deck chairs or in the sauna tubs towards the stern of the ship. And by and large, we succeeded. And I have to say at this stage that Jane was a bit of a hero because she joined the ship shortly after an emergency appendix operation. So in the run-up to the voyage itself, in the last week, we were not certain that we would even make it. But thankfully we did, and because of Jane's operation, we had to take things fairly steadily at the start. I would only allow her to do a maximum of a mile.
Mm-hmm.
But after some rest and relaxation on the ship, it was clear that she was ready for more, and as I say, we worked up to 5 mile stretches and continued that all the way across the Atlantic. So a fairly unique preparation for carrying the Olympic flame in a couple of weeks' time for both of us.
So how far will you be carrying the flame?
Oh, that we don't know yet. We haven't had the full details, but anything from 300 meters to perhaps a mile, depending on how things work out, because there are 8,000 torchbearers
mm-hmm.
carrying the flame from the southwest tip of the country when it comes here on the 19th of May, all the way around the country, including Wales and Scotland, and back down to London. And they're dividing the legs up in accordance with the local areas. So we have yet to be told how far we're going to carry the flame. And indeed, we're not sure whether one of us will be handing over to the other. That information has got to be... we're waiting for that to come through at the moment.
That's right, because not that it's exactly coincidental, but you were nominated in different ways and chosen separately to do this.
We were indeed. I was nominated by the wife of a friend of mine. He sadly is suffering from a debilitating combination of diseases, which means he lives in a wheelchair and is losing his ability to walk and speak and do anything. But we've been getting him for the last couple of years into a swimming pool once a week and getting him swimming. And when he can't do that, we use the village hall locally to get him walking, and we do as much as we can to keep him active.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife very generously nominated me to carry the Olympic flame because of the work I was doing with Andy.
Mm-hmm. And Jane was nominated in a different way.
I was nominated because of partly because of the length of service I've been in the Royal Naval Reserves. I've been serving now for, this is my coming up to my 33rd year. So I've always had a job, a civilian job, and alongside it run reserve service time as well. And that takes a huge amount of commitment, fitting things in evenings and weekends. And at sometimes, such as when I was mobilised to go to Iraq for a full-length tour, then clearly I don't have a civilian job and I'm just wearing uniform the full time. But I am so chuffed to be holding, you know, carrying the flame that day as well, and it will be a wonderful experience. I'm just determined that I hand to Frank and that he doesn't hand over to me, but we'll sort that domestic out later, I think. But also New York was good training area for us as well.
Yeah.
But we were able to do a lot of walking in New York. On every day we managed to clock up about 4 to 5 miles, and that was an opportunity for us to walk around the city. We did see some more Titanic memorial or, you know, things there as well, such as the quayside where the Carpathia with all the rescued people came in. So that was important for me to see that as well. But, yeah, we managed to clock up the miles in New York.
I think Jane has modestly omitted the fact that one of the reasons she was nominated for the Flame is that in 2007 she did a solo charity walk starting at John O'Groats, the northernmost tip of Great Britain, and walked 1,200 miles on her own to the southwesternmost tip of Britain at Land's End. And she raised £10 a mile, £12,000 for the Royal British Legion, which do wonderful good work in helping ex-servicemen. So that is the main reason, really, why she was nominated and chosen for the honor of carrying the Olympic flame.
Well, that's wonderful. I look forward to hearing more about that after you do it. It sounds like another once-in-a-lifetime experience that you're going to have.
2012 has certainly been a year for us, Anne.
I guess so. Well, is there anything else you want to add before we let you go?
I think one other thing, which I think is really important about just going back to the Titanic, the retracing the route was really important, the service was important. But I do think that people very often overlook what happened afterwards. There was a huge inquiry. It was such a monumental disaster because it affected so many nationalities at the time. And I think people overlook what it must have been like for the survivors coming in on the rescue ship, the Carpathia, as they came into New York. After they got picked up, they experienced appalling weather coming from the rescue site into New York. They came in about 3 to 4 days after they'd got picked up. Clearly extremely traumatized, confused, bewildered, exhausted, all those things. And then probably for the first time ever, they had to face what today is pretty normal, but then 100 years ago it wasn't normal. They had to face the media of the world, because by then they'd been able to get reporters in. They weren't protected, really. Reporters managed to wangle their way onto a flotilla of little craft that came out to greet the Carpathia. Reporters managed to also get up. Some of them managed to board the Carpathia. Not many, but they did. And by modern-day standards, we think, well, nothing of it. The media are always there, the press. But then it was as if the whole beacon of the world was shining on America, because it was such an unusual disaster, this enormous, luxurious ship that had gone down on its maiden voyage. We all know about the very wealthy and to-do people that were on that ship, but also the crew and everything else. And I think it was something that people don't really understand. Today it's taken as just normal, but then it was exceptionally unusual. And they had to deal with all that as well after losing loved ones, and it must have been just terrible for them all.
That's an excellent point. Hadn't thought about that either. Well, I want to thank you both so much for joining us today, talking to us back here in the colonies.
You will, and thank you very much, Anne. It's been a pleasure talking to people in the colonies.
Thank you both.
Thank you.